This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. Is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Hello, welcome to the Michael K. Show. I hope you have a fun day today.
Boy, that sounds like another life ago. Anyway, thank you, Charlie, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Thursday. It's December 3rd, 2020. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, those are certainly your responsibility. Hope you're all well. What a beautiful day. Donald and Peter, how are you doing?
Good.
Yeah?
Gorgeous day. Nothing changes a mood better than the sun, right?
Sun helps, Don. That was deep, Don.
Dave Maloney said this best, all right?
He interrupted you when he said it, right?
No, not at all. I took it in like a gentleman. The information.
We're going to need that, too.
We're in, as the Canadians say, Detroit, and we're walking to Joe Louis Arena.
Minding your own business.
For the morning skate. Now, Michael, I know you got in a lot of trouble for this because you were very specific in your criticism of Detroit that really bothered
me. No more. Now I'm a big
Jim
Detroit
Leland.
Fan.
But, you know, so this is going back 10 years ago, and Joe Louis Arena was not in the greatest of neighborhoods. So the walk from the hotel to the arena was, you know, it was the middle of the day, but there wasn't a lot going on. The way I would describe it was like a zombie movie before the zombies come out. Like, there's nobody around.
Apocalyptic is what you're saying.
That's Detroit. But it was a beautiful day. And Dave says, you know what? It's amazing how good a city can look when the sun's out. And I thought that was so deep, because if that had been like an overcast, rainy day, just, you know, you're on one of the worst places on the planet. But the sun's out. You know what? We can make this work.
But I do have to give some love to Detroit. That they've really, that city's turned around.
Michael, that's why I said 10 years ago, Joe Louis Arena, right? But now they've moved to the Little Caesars Arena, which is right there by the Ford Theater. It's now where Comerica Park is. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And the walk there is really nice, but when you had to go stay, you know, by the Cobb Center, you know, it's still kind of rough in that area. But at least where the arena is now, where the Red Wings and Pistons play, and now with the Tigers and the Lions all in that space, it is really a nice city that's turned itself around. But 2008, not so much.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Don't yell at me. I don't remember why. There's no game tonight.
I think with all the maneuvers, they moved the game.
There was going to be a Thursday nighter that is now gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I forget what. It had to be one of the games that were affected, right? Was Dallas-Baltimore a Thursday?
It might have been. I think that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was
it. Because they both played last Thursday.
Right. I think that was the Thursday night game, so there was no way that was going to happen.
Why can NBA players and MLB players and hockey players go back-to-back?
Yeah, come on, man.
Back-to-back football game.
Don't. Take that back.
I'm sorry.
I don't think any football player. You want to talk about how bad things would look. That would not be a good game to play on the second of back-to-backs.
Now, a lot of people sometimes ask me, Michael, what do you do after the show?
Michael, what do you do after the show?
Well, I'll get a bite to eat, and I'll sit down with the family and watch some TV. So we were watching the Christmas tree lighting. And then I just had the greatest time. I really engaged on Twitter. And I defended my guy.
Oh, wow.
I went after people that were going after Peter. I will not have it. If anyone's going to pick on Peter, it's going to be me.
I didn't even know it was happening. And then Michael said, just kind of like, hey, he gave me a kind of a heads up. So then I open Pandora's box. I can't say it made me feel great, but I really appreciated what you were saying.
You always know something's up, Peter, because Michael's got an obnoxious amount of followers the way you do. I mean, I'm decent, but you guys have way more than I do. So when Michael starts getting into this, well, he does on occasion. It's almost like a State of the Union. It's like a State of the Show that he does every like 6 months to a year. I know it's happening because I get fragmented tweets. And what I mean by that is I'm getting tweets that I'm on that isolated make no sense. So that means I've got to follow the trail of where this is all coming from. Like, it'll say, I think Don's great too. Like, what does this mean? What does this
right,
mean?
Right, now you got to go dig.
Right, so then you do some digging, and then you find the original tweet, which was Michael defending Peter, or Michael making some sort of grand statement. So that's how I was alerted to it.
Well, I started making one baseball statement. John Heyman reported that the Cubs did not tender a contract to Kyle Schwarber.
Right.
And I just said, Brian Cashman has always really liked Kyle Schwarber and has tried to make trades for him before. And that's just what we need, blah, blah, blah. But so, then, you know, all of a sudden people see that I'm engaging, and they took a shot at Peter, and I can't have it.
And there's
a narrative about the show. So for the few people that don't want to listen, well, we talk about politics too much. And I said, we never talk about politics, ever. So you might know, or you might think you know, which way Peter leans. And what I was saying to people, okay, let's say that you're diametrically opposed to Peter's political views, and he doesn't tell us on the show.
No, never.
That means you can't listen to a sports show? And then I said, that's the problem with our world right now.
Whoops.
So, I thought it was fun. And
I'm surprised, though. I was surprised to see you going there.
A lot of people stuck up for you, though.
Well, the thing that bothered... Here, I'll just say one thing. And I really do appreciate you doing it. And you're right. It's really terrible. Like, when I see someone crushing me, and then I look at their avatar, and it becomes clear that it's a political thing.
Right.
That really stinks, and it's really weak. But furthermore, it must frustrate you, too. This narrative of everyone has stopped listening since Peter came on board.
Right, and I just kept saying, well, we've become number one, so how does that doesn't exactly jive.
So even if you don't, even if someone out there didn't want to credit me for our improvement in any way. Okay.
Good reason.
Sure. But what you're arguing is literally the exact opposite? You're saying we've fallen apart over the last 5 years. In what has been, you guys would say, from a number statistic standpoint, the greatest five-year run in the history of the show.
Yep.
They are saying, no, that's false. Everyone has stopped listening.
That's interesting. The thing that made me laugh is that somebody had the nerve to say, you're just using him because of ratings, not because you like him.
Damn right
you
are.
He's just a pawn. I said, we're all used. We're all pawns. If we didn't get ratings, Don and I are not on the air because we're Fabio, because we get ratings. That's what it is. As Chris Russo so aptly put, get a rating.
I remember
what he said.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. I just had a blast. You know, like a friend of mine called me today and said, you know, it really bothered me that you're getting so aggravated. I said, I wasn't aggravated in the least. I loved it. I love to engage with fans. Think it's great, but don't go after my guys.
No, but there is it is very frustrating because there's so many people that they just have these judgments based on a preconceived notion, right? And so there are people that believe that Peter leans a certain way. They lean the other way and will say, I don't listen to that show because it's just way too political. And realizing that it's never political. It never gets talked about. So you're bringing your preconceived notion into
Absolutely.
Your decision not to listen to the
Absolutely.
Show. And also, full disclosure, too, there's a lot of rumors that the other station was possibly going to team Carton up with Chris Christie. And I'm sure that would probably had been very polarizing for him because there's already preconceived notions about him politically. So if he just went on there and just talked about the Mets and the Cowboys all day, people say, I don't listen to that show because he's too political because of the preconceived notion. We do not talk politics hardly ever. And our views are not something that's overly controversial. What Peter might say or tweet or be involved in elsewhere, along with myself and Michael, does not always apply to what happens here. Just like, Michael, you're a Yankee. All they do is talk Yankees on that show. I don't talk. Oh, that's your preconceived notion that because Michael's the Yankee announcer, that's all we do.
And it is also funny because I got a lot of, you know, because when somebody said the Yankees are are all excited about maybe getting Kyle Schwarber while the Mets are and they named all the – and I said, kind of coming from a different place. The Yankees kind of have Judge, Stanton, and Cole, so they're coming from a different place. And then, right, oh, Yankee boy, what a shill. And then I just I retweeted that and go, for those that listened to the show yesterday, this is what you get. You can't win. You're either a Yankee boy or you're not enough of a Yankee. It's wonderful. Twitter, I've learned to appreciate Twitter rather than fight against it. I think it's wonderful.
Embrace the madness, Michael.
I do. If we were self-centered, egomaniacal bloviators who thought the world revolved around us.
Right.
Then we would actually believe that Adam Gase today was reacting to what Don said yesterday. But only a bloviator who's very, very impressed with oneself would think that. But it is odd, Don, where you tore into Gase in a very measured way because he kind of threw Darnold under the bus yesterday. Today, it's a completely different story. Now, if you have a little bloviator in you, Don, you must feel pretty good because he did reverse course today.
Well, and it's not because of me, but what I think happened is what ended up on my radar, what rang my bell, so to speak, I think rang the bell within the organization. Right? I sensed it. I'm sure people in the organization said, Adam, really? Really? All right, you're 0-11. You can't defend your quarterback, who, by the way, goes on the Michael Kay Show and talks to the media after every game, every Monday, every Wednesday or Thursday leading into the next game, and defends you and says he trusts you and says he believes in you, and you can't throw him a bone. So what I recognized, I'm sure, was recognized in that organization. Like, hey, Sam Darnold's our quarterback, and he's our quarterback until further notice. And you're our coach until further notice. Defend him. Talk him up. What's the matter with you? I think that's what happened, Michael, because it wasn't hard to see. If I didn't say it, you or Peter would have said it. I mean, how ridiculous was it? We live in a world where managers and head coaches twist themselves in the pretzels to defend their players. And he couldn't do that?
Well, let's listen to what Gase said. He was asked, do you blame yourself at all for Sam Darnold's struggles? Here's Gase.
Yep. I came here to help him develop his career, and we haven't been able to do that. You know, that's why every game is so important, is keep trying to help him grow, keep trying to help him, you know, develop and see things the way that he needs to see them and play the way that I've seen him play in certain games. You know, at the same time, that's what's frustrating sometimes about the quarterback position is you do need 10 other guys to do their job as well. You know, it's just like when he throws one of those really good balls and, you know, we have a drop, that's frustrating because it doesn't seem like a big deal. But for us right now, it's like one little thing and you know, it stops a drive. And we got a punt, like those things. It's like the momentum shift. It's carrying throughout the game. We need to do things well, you know, around him. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's on me to get him to play better than what he's played. And so far, I haven't done a good enough job. I have to just keep trying to help him, keep trying to help our staff put together good game plans, dial myself. You know, we just keep trying to work as hard as we possibly can to put him in the best position possible.
Now, for whatever reason he made the U-turn or pivoted on a dime, I'm trying to interpret what it means. Is that the white flag? Does he know he's not coming back? Because I was thinking about what's next for Adam Gase if he loses this job. He had one job, and that was to turn Sam Darnold into the franchise quarterback of the Jets. Mission not accomplished. He did not do what he should have done and what has been done in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill. His play calling is pedestrian at best. Pedantic almost. It's awful. Where's his next job coming from? I don't think he has this huge tree of supportive people that would... I don't even know if he could be a quarterback coach now.
No. It's so interesting because there have been bad coaches before, you know. And all of them find a way to get back into the league in some way, shape, or form, unless there's something that happened outside of football that kind of blacklisted them, right? You know, if it's something like that, where, like, what's going on? You're telling me Jim Fossil couldn't land another job somewhere? right? That so something must have happened. But most of the time, you know, Marinelli got a job right after going 0-16 with Detroit. You know, Hugh Jackson didn't even get fired after going 0-16 with Cleveland. Guys find jobs. But the thing is, Michael, he was hired for such a specific reason. He's an offensive guy. And you look at the stats, even beyond the Jets, everywhere, he's like in the mid-20s, his rankings of the offenses that he's been involved in. You wouldn't want him to come within 10 feet of your quarterback in the future. Would you really feel like he's going to help you on an offensive standpoint?
Maybe he's got to go to college.
So, listen, he's been a head coach in the NFL with 6 years of experience if he gets fired after this, right? Or 5 years experience, 3 in Miami, 2 here. So I guess there's something he might be able to do in the NFL where some head coach might think that he might be valuable.
I don't know, bud.
But I wouldn't bet on it.
He can't go into TV. He's got no personality. He's an absolute drip. So maybe he's got to go back to college. Maybe, you know, there's an allure for a college program, like a mid-level college program, to hire a former NFL coach.
Yeah, I think because there you can say, hey, he might end up being on an 0-16 team, but he was a head coach of a team that went 7-9 the year before. He was a head coach of a team that went to the playoffs in Miami.
Right.
So I'm sure there's some college somewhere that'll say, I like that experience. But, Michael, when you fail in New York, man, it's tough because everybody seems to notice, right? I mean, you're going to be the head coach of arguably the worst team in the history of football if they go 0-16, literally. So that stink is going to be on him more than probably anybody else because those players will all go elsewhere and try to figure it out. But and to do it in New York is the grand stage, right?
But so it's so much, though. The you could be 0-16. You didn't develop a quarterback at all. Your best players are all gone and ran. And you never showed anything that was charming or endearing or wins you over to the people at all. It's just there's really almost no positive to latch on to.
Now,
where
now
did Kotite go after the Jets? I want to look that up.
He went away.
I
don't think he ever worked again. I think he went away.
Yeah, because I don't remember any. And he wasn't that old of a man when he was fired.
Now, Darnold, 0-7 this season as a starter. Missed 4 games with a shoulder injury. This is amazing to me. In 7 games, he has engineered 6 touchdown drives. That's not throwing touchdowns. Engineered a touchdown drive. He's the lowest rated passer in the NFL. A career low 64 rating. He's gone 4 straight games without a TD pass. 4 straight. The longest drought for a Jet quarterback since Geno Smith in 2013. Wow. That's not a good resume builder for Adam Gase. And I still contend it's not a good resume builder for Sam Darnold. Just not.
But I was thinking about this, Michael. If you remember the second half, I think, of his rookie season, I think he had, if not the best, one of the best quarterback ratings in the NFL. You know, he was the quarterback of the team that won 6 of their final 8 games last year, albeit against, you know, bad competition. But still, you know, we could debate where Sam is. You cannot debate me that he hasn't been damaged by at least this coaching staff. Now, some of it's on Sam, I agree. And maybe we have to reevaluate exactly how good Sam is. He didn't get any help. Any. With this coaching staff. In any way, shape, or form. And I was right. Rich Kotite never worked again. That was his last gig.
You know what? I think he banked the money that Hess gave him. And Gase still has 3 years left on his contract at a lot of money, so he doesn't have to work. Rick DiPietro points out that Ben McAdoo got a job right away, but Ben McAdoo had 1 year where he was really respected and previously was respected.
He was 11-5. One of Eli's best years was him as the offensive coordinator.
Freddie Kitchens got a job right away, Peter.
That's right.
Tight ends coach. I mean, that's quite a drop from head coach to tight ends coach, but still, you're in the league.
I don't know if this guy's in the league.
Okay.
Who's that?
Gase? Freddie Kitchens.
No, Freddie Kitchens in the league.
He's the tight ends coach of the Giants.
Yeah.
Adam Gase? I don't think so. He's going to need a little breather.
A friend of mine texted me and said, I don't know if he could be a college coach. You have to recruit. I mean, Gase coming into your living room, I mean, really, say, oh, I'm sending my kid there.
I wasn't even thinking about him being a head coach in college. I was thinking that he might be able to, you know, Peyton Manning make a phone call and maybe be a quality control coach for Marshall or something.
Well, maybe Saban brings him back. He has a relationship with Saban. He went from Michigan State to Alabama with him. So there is some connection there. And maybe Saban asked Belichick, do you need somebody to, you know, to do this or that? There might be something there, but boy, just on merit alone, this season, and the way he's so negatively portrayed by people in the know, everybody that we have on just completely blames him.
Here's the thing. He never should have got the job in the first place, right? I mean, we all question the resume, but you figure, all right, maybe they know something we don't. You know, Peyton Manning, blah, 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 blah. All right? So there may be a job for him someplace else just because, all right, he was given a position that he's just not good at. You know, but maybe there is something that people that know him could say he can add some quality. Head coach is not one of those things. He doesn't seem like he's a great communicator. I don't think he's a great people person by any stretch. The one thing I will say in the tenure, and you really can't argue with this at all, is the team doesn't seem to give up on him. They didn't give up on him last year after going 1-7.
I always wonder if we hang too much of our hats on that. I mean, that's your job.
I know, but you do see, come on, especially with the modern-day athlete, Peter. It's so easy to lose the room now. Look what happened in Dallas. I mean, McCarthy comes in with a ring. And like in week 5, you heard there was a mutiny. Like, players don't keep their mouth shut. Right. If players you heard Keyshawn. There's with a 53-man roster, somebody's going to say something, and there's also been hardly a peep.
Let's be fair too, though. The combination personality wise of Mike McCarthy and Adam Gase, it's not exactly Abbott and Costello. I mean, neither of them even has a face that shows emotion. They just don't connect.
But how often in the modern-day athlete do you hear them bite their tongue and defend to a hilt their coach when the whole world is killing them? Well, he's had a couple of little blow-ups here or there, but for the most part, for an 0-11 team, how many fires have we had to put out?
Well, he's got to put one out now with the offensive lineman because he wasn't in practice again today. So 1-800-919-3776. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Woj is going to join us at 4 o'clock. Don has a Daily Don today. RJ Bell will probably celebrate that win that he had last week.
Now, we also got to lay the ground rules for him now. He doesn't dictate the number. We dictate the number. What games do you like? And here's
well, it's weird, though, because we get the number from his service.
It's very fluid, Michael. Obviously, he's in Vegas, so I'm sure it changes by the hour. And also, we're taking his word for it.
So you don't trust him?
No, he goes by our numbers. We dictate the number. No, I do not want to look at Jarv on Monday and see that he had the same game as me, and I had it at 2.5, and he had it at 4. All right, that's over. We agree?
Right, and I think Andrew has to tell him, have your pick ready. Don't make your pick and think about it while you're on the air.
I think what Andrew needs to do is every Thursday, he sends us the lines. Right? Send it to RJ. And that's the line he goes off of.
Andrew, you know what you should do? You should drop him a line today and just encourage him to not sound like he's making up his pick on the spot.
It was horrifying.
Yeah. Just a little. When they say, hey, what's your pick? We shouldn't hear the ruffling of newspapers.
Somewhere between indifferent and good.
Exactly. So maybe nudge him. Give him a little nudgy nudge.
I try every day.
Andrew,
we do have guests that go off the reservation, like he's making picks, and then we have other guests that are making dinner. It's interesting, but it's all part of the charm.
Hey, listen, the guy that you still believe is number one was like working out in the Superdome during an interview.
Shows how great he is,
but he is tremendous,
and he stepped it up. Peter has even admitted that.
By the way, we didn't get to mention this all week. You know who was phenomenal on the show last Friday?
Who?
Ryan Clark.
He's very good.
He told us some good Sean Taylor stories, and I thought you guys would enjoy when I asked him. I said, so we talked about the Washington-Dallas game yesterday. I said, obviously you haven't been on Washington for a long time. Do you have any affinity when you watch them? Like, any affinity? Absolutely not. No, not even a little bit. And then went on to say he has no affinity for the Steelers either, and that even from a college standpoint, LSU doesn't make or break his mood. It's very interesting.
Wow, he's...
Because most athletes you find, we've always found on this show, football players don't give a damn about NFL teams, but never let go of their college teams.
Oh, absolutely.
No, he said he likes when they win, but he doesn't
care. I'm rooting for me.
That's what it sounded like.
It's a business. But college, they choose the college. The pros choose them.
My family didn't own a business. We hardly could even do business with a business.
That's right.
Now, I have to send you this, Peter, because you're too cheap to subscribe to The Athletic, but a very interesting Q&A, long Q&A, with Trey Davis Wingo.
Really? Does he mention me?
Not a bit. Not a bit.
How is it, though?
It's really good. Very honest. Extraordinarily honest.
He was... When he was on the show last Friday, you could find the podcast, when I asked him to sort of wax poetic on his history with ESPN, he was gracious, like you would expect. Andrew, would you agree? He wasn't, like, glowing, though.
Well, I mean, because in this story,
he kept it real. Yeah.
They didn't want him back.
It wasn't like he
decided not to go, or he decided to go. They didn't want him back. He wanted to stay. They didn't want it. He said they have every right. It's their business. I get it.
But yeah, you could hear that he felt it was that there was a little bit of nonsense going on there, and I respected it. Listen, if someone tells me, listen, we all know how we feel, at least me and Michael. Someone ever tells us we're not welcome, we'll do everything in our power to take them down for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I want to hear the interview Michael does if he's ever get let go by ESPN. Scorched earth.
Well, I might take the Phil Rizzuto route. Remember when they released him in 1956, he wanted to completely destroy the Yankees. And then a couple of people said, just don't say anything. Think about it for a while. And then a couple of months later, they hired him to be a broadcaster, and he had a longer career in the booth than he did as a player. If he had scorched the earth, he would never have gotten that broadcast job. So,
but it's such a mixed bag. It's hard to think about. I've been at Hot now for 13 years. It was my dream to... The first time I ever set foot in that building, I couldn't even believe it. And I didn't work there for another 5 years, but I couldn't believe I even set foot in the building. And now I've been there for 13, and I don't plan on going anywhere. But, like, if they were to let me go in my 15th year, are you angry because you've given so much? Are you grateful for them giving you a lifetime? It's hard.
Well, I mean, Trey was with ESPN for 21 years, I think.
Yep.
And he said something that, again, very curious to me. He said he loves so many people there, he would never root for them to do the network to do poorly. And I said, gee, I don't get that.
No, you've made that
because they're very people close to him, and like you can't be closer than I am to Don and Peter. But you know, I would want them all to go down in flames if they got rid of me.
All right, well, hold on. One last question. I know we have to break. ESPN says to you, Michael, we want to keep you, right, but given everything that's happening, we are asking you to take X pay cut, and it's significant enough that to you it's no longer worth it. So they go, okay, well then we have to let you go. Do you still feel that way, or do you feel that you opted out of a pay cut?
I'd have to think about that. It would be a little less jarring than them saying we hate your guts.
Got it. Okay.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7, but that's not going to happen. 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Because, Don, what sense would it make to have a radio station and then take the transmitter down? Doesn't make sense.
You can't do it. There's no station left.
No, because I'm Sully. Yeah.
Well, they went all digital, and they said, we're going to take the transmitter down, so you're out.
That I could say. Anyway, we'll take your phone calls. Adam Gase listened to Don and completely changed his tune. It's Kay LeGreco-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists. Take it away, Donnie.
Now, just to prove to you guys that things are very fluid when I do the top five, right? I'm not married to anything. So earlier today, I realized that today is the 72nd birthday of Ozzy Osbourne.
So wow. Like, I got to come up with some sort of Aussie top five.
Sure right? You do.
But then I'm like, that takes Peter and Michael out of it. What am I going to do? Top five Aussie songs? Crickets That's, for you guys. Yeah. Right? So, and I was going to be like, no. Ozzy's a great. Everybody knows Ozzy's a household name. I'll find something. And if you guys aren't in, tough. But I said, you know what? I think I can tweak it. So with Ozzy in mind, great front man, right? How about the top five front men / women in rock and roll history? That way I honor Ozzy and get you guys involved. See?
Wow. Beautiful thinking by you. I'd like to contribute Jonathan Bartholomew Lennon.
Here's why no. Who's the front man of the Beatles? Why did you go John and not Paul McCartney?
Because John's the front man of the Beatles.
Is he?
Yes.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't know if that's true. Paul sang a bunch of songs. No, there was no front man.
There was.
All four are iconic. George sang some songs that were iconic. Right Here Comes the Sun.
Sure.
You know, something.
Yep.
So I got one.
Hold on. Before we finish, though, I it's your list. I will take the L. And I'm not saying that Paul McCartney isn't an unusually standout second man, but John Lennon is the front man of the Beatles. It's,
Michael, you know what I'm talking about, right?
No. I know exactly what you're saying. You are still wrong. It's still his group. It died because of him. He was the essence because of the group.
He was killed 10 years after they broke up.
Yoko
broke it up.
Yeah, the group. John Lennon, Yoko was the end of the Beatles. He was the essence
of the
group.
I don't know.
But either way, I'm excited to hear the rest of the list.
It's a LaGreca show. Maybe that'll be what we'll do with my brother.
It's a tremendous
maybe he'll be a guest host or something. That's good stuff, Peter. Thank you, but you're wrong.
All right, David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth, Michael, is number three. Now,
listen to him.
Come on. Is there anybody more flamboyant than David Lee Roth? And then, usually the way I kind of go by my rules that the band would be destroyed if said front man left, that did not happen with Van Halen, but it completely changed their direction. They went from a hard rock band.
But does Sammy Hagar get a listing now?
No.
What's that?
Does Sammy Hagar get a listing?
No. What?
No, because they weren't as iconic when David Lee Roth was the lead singer, and they completely changed and became a pop band. But nobody, I shouldn't say nobody because there's other people on the list, but when you think front man, with his athleticism and the way he carried himself, he was like the quintessential front man, David Lee Roth. Great pull by Michael at three.
Well.
John Lennon.
Yeah, I know. What am I thinking? Well, then I guess you said who's more than him? Well, I guess more would be Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger is number two. Now, there's Keith Richards, who's also iconic. But really, who carries themselves better than Mick Jagger? Who commands a stage better than Mick? And I don't know. Would they be able to go on without him? I don't think so. I got him at number two.
How about Bono?
Thought about Bono.
Wow.
Who are you taking out? I thought of putting him at five. So this was seriously considered. Because I'm not a big U2 fan, but I understand greatness when it happens, okay? The Edge is very close in the band, right? Bono and the Edge. Bono's bigger than the Edge, but still, the Edge is very, very close. And I don't know if he's got the charisma of a Mick Jagger or a David Lee Roth. But I thought about it, but I put him like maybe six or seven. Definitely a top 10, but I got it outside. And that bothered Andrew a lot.
I would say a man named Steven Tyler.
Thought about Steven Tyler.
Oh, my goodness.
This list is a joke.
Is it really a joke? When you haven't even finished, we've got two names.
David Lee Roth, to me, has already invalidated the list.
Really? Explain to me how.
Well, let's hear the rest of the list. But right now, when you say who you're taking out, I would say already Steven Tyler for David Lee Roth. Done.
We'll further discuss. But, Michael, I got to tell you, usually it's your attitude that bothers me with these things. His attitude bothers me, and I think it bothers you a little bit, too.
No, it doesn't. I'm fully invested.
I've changed. How about Phil Collins?
Stop yourself.
Yeah, that's not a... I mean, he's...
Well, he was the front man of Genesis.
He was the back man of Genesis.
Mm. But he was the front man, too.
Yeah, but... No, I don't... No. Great musician, great drummer, great artist.
Doesn't pop as a front man at all.
Let's go. Axl Rose.
Thought about Axl Rose. Great front man. Great front man. I just don't, I'm not putting Guns N' Roses on the level of some of the bands that I have in this top five.
I've got one.
All right.
Freddie Mercury.
Michael, Freddie Mercury is number one.
Yeah!
Beautifully done.
Now, Queen has moved on, but not for the better, in my opinion. I mean, he was just, again, quintessential frontman. His performance at Live Aid is considered one of the greatest, if not the absolute greatest performance ever, and just put Queen right on the map. Freddie Mercury, to me, is number one. So we got Freddie at one, Mick at two, David Lee Roth at three. So we need four, and we need five. I don't think you'll get either of these two, and they're not.
I'll get
metal.
One.
Yeah, don't tell me what I'll get.
I'll get one.
How about Lars?
From Metallica?
It's your favorite band.
The drummer?
Oh, he's the drummer? Hold on. Hold on. Remind me who the lead singer is again.
James Hetfield. And no, I
James Hetfield.
I do not have a James Hetfield.
How about
in the top five?
How about Jim Morrison?
Jim Morrison, Michael, you're nailing it. Number four. The Doors are iconic. They tried to continue with an album or two after him, but with his antics and getting arrested on stage and just his presence, I mean,
the only place to get arrested.
He is a absolute god in a very, very short period of time, but he also a staple of a front man, Jim Morrison, the late Jim Morrison of the Doors, number four. Michael, you're tremendous today. Great job.
Thank you. Look how much encouragement it takes to just keep Michael involved. You have to, like, feed him snacks just to get him not to give up.
Why don't you get one right, okay? John Lennon?
I mean, this is let me throw out Kurt Cobain.
I thought about Kurt Cobain. Very brief. But no.
How about Robert Plant?
You know, I thought a lot about Robert Plant. I actually had Plant at five, but here's my situation. Again, great front man. Who are you taking out? But would you say he's not on equal footing with Jimmy Page? Absolutely.
I still understand. So Keith Richards and Mick Jagger, you got no issue with.
But Mick Lennon Jagger, Keith Richards McCartney. Is iconic. It's still Mick. Mick makes that whole band go.
That, same with the Beatles.
No, you see, you're wrong.
Oh my
God, the Beatles
happens without Lennon.
So you're a Lennon guy, but you're just gonna. Well, Paul McCartney was like a sidekick.
No, he wasn't a sidekick. He was a.
You guys hate that word.
Yeah, I hate the word sidekick.
Well, it's not accurate.
And I would never use it for Paul McCartney, but it's still Lennon's band.
That's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous.
It's a Lennon and McCartney band. They're equals.
Lennon and McCartney are equals. They wrote had their name. There's two names.
Oh, my God.
First of all, that's not factual. That's not factual. You can actually look at a breakdown, which I just did right now, on who sang lead vocals on which songs. And guess what?
No.
Until the last couple years of their career, it heavily leaned John Lennon.
Their names are on every song. They're as writers. You can't say that they're
writers,
not equals.
As writers, okay. You know the writing credits for between
but,
Richard
but you
and Jagger?
You understand. Where do you think frontman comes from? I mean, George, Paul, and John were just lined up in front of the stage. Nobody stood out. Even when they were singing, they would sing from their perch.
You guys can both yell, shout me down, tell me I'm an idiot, I'm younger, I don't know.
Peter, listen, not everybody gets everything.
To say that it's crazy that I consider the Beatles to be Lennon's band is not crazy.
You don't know.
Listen,
I don't know everything. You don't know everything.
He is far and away the most iconic part of the Beatles. It's not even close.
You're crazy. You're out of you. To say it's not even close, you're crazy.
If Lennon doesn't die, we're never discussing whose band it is.
Oh my
it's they're not in the same conversation.
I don't know what to say.
It's
Mike.
John Lennon, step down, Paul McCartney. That's what it is.
And no, it's not.
And they're so iconic that the rest of rock and roll only starts after McCartney. That's how big they are. But Lennon is in his own world. And to say it's not comparable to Richards and Jagger is complete bias. And then for Eddie Van Halen to even be hanging out in this list is a joke.
How could you parallel Keith Richards to Paul McCartney?
Because in his band, he's also iconic and just below Mick Jagger.
Stevie Nicks, Don, for number five.
I thought about Stevie Nicks, but I went with another female. And since we're up against it here, I will tell you. And then people will argue, but it's a Hall of Fame band.
Joan Jett.
Deborah Harry of Blondie. Because people actually think that her name's Blondie. That's how iconic she is in that iconic band. And plus, she's from my hometown of Hawthorne, New Jersey. Grew up
on Peter's had some awful takes. This was the worst.
Peter, honestly, I'm just telling you as a friend, lay out.
I'm telling you, lay out.
Over your skis, man. Seriously.
No, I'm not.
You are in a realm that you just don't fully get.
No, I'm not. I'm looking at the list right now.
No, listen, it's fourth down in the Super Bowl, and you're in the huddle.
Yeah, by the way, if we were to do a poll,
any of the practices,
if we were to do a poll,
any of the plays.
If we were to do a poll, who's the lead singer of the Beatles?
No.
And you listed them all.
You can't do it.
Guess what the percentage would come up?
No,
80%
right.
John Lennon.
You're wrong. He's wrong.
I'm not.
He's wrong.
I'm not. And how Van Halen even ends up in this conversation, Blondie too, with the people that are left off, is psychotic. Psychotic.
All right, can we go to R.J. Bell? We want to get the
this is off. This is going to be better than R.J. Bell.
Oh, love.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. McCartney should have been the front man for Wings, though, Don. He has to be on the top five.
Okay, that's a good point. But it's Paul McCartney in Wings, isn't it? That's why it's not. I wouldn't put Tom Petty or Bruce Springsteen because they put their name in the band. So that kind of gives it away.
All right, R.J. Bell comes up and makes some picks in just a moment. Stick around. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg, McCartney, Lennon, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Adrian Wojnarowski.
Now, earlier we played a clip where you referred to Bradley Beal as Brad Beal.
Play with Brad Beal?
Is that a real thing, or are you able to just make that up on the fly because you're woke?
He goes by both. It is Bradley Beal. There's people around him who call him Brad. I guess I've used both. I hadn't thought of that. I was trying to be concise.
This is the Michael K. Show.
I've been spending a couple years trying to get Jim Harden going. Is there any track for that?
No, he's a James.
On 98.7 ESPN.
You know, I get the sinking feeling that this is 2 days out of four that Peter has insulted and alienated a guest that's important to the show. Steve Young on Monday, when he made a joke about somebody who had an issue on Zoom.
Not true.
And then this one, he's asking about it because he said Brad Beal. If Adam Schefter came on and said Pat Mahomes, you'd say, well, isn't that Patrick?
Do you really think that Woj was offended?
No, I do. I do.
I don't believe you.
I think there's a chance we lose great guests because of your insouciance.
I think he was taken back by it because he doesn't maybe know the way Peter operates and how much fun he can be during an interview.
Yeah, but I love that stuff. He's here to spit facts, give us information.
I just thought it was a goof.
But he does owe Steve Young an apology.
No. I refuse.
Don't worry, Peter. I apologize for you.
You did?
Yep.
He probably was like, what are you talking about, weirdo? Not a big deal.
He didn't catch it, first of all.
See? So what's there to apologize for?
And that then is... he said, if I would have caught it, I don't think I'd have ever been on your show again.
That's not true. That's simply not true what you just said.
Okay. All right, so yesterday was Tender Day. Tender is the night at 8 p.m. And there were 39 players that were tendered. No, 59, and then 59 signed early contracts so that they avoided not being non-tendered. Gary Sanchez, as we told you was going to happen, was tendered a contract, so looks like he'll be a Yankee. And Steven Matz was tendered a contract, and then he ended up signing one without going to arbitration, signed for $5.2 million. He made what would have been $5 million last year, Don, if they played 162.
Right.
So they gave him a $200,000 raise for having a year where I think his ERA was over 10.
The process is broken.
The process is broken. Yeah. And Gary Sanchez is going to get a raise after hitting 147. It's a broken process. But there were some names that that cropped up that intrigued me.
Go ahead. So
I thought I'd read some of them to you. In terms of the Yankees, I would make a run on Carlos Rodon. I'm surprised that they didn't tender him. He's a former third pick in the first round in 2014. He's had a lot of injuries, but boy, when he's healthy, he's excellent. Archie Bradley, who was traded to the Reds and appeared in just six games for them, and then one game in the playoffs, he was non-tendered. Good pitcher out of the bullpen. I would go after him. Jose Ureña, another pitcher that I might take a shot at. Ryan Stanek, who had a terrible year this past year, but you remember him, the guy with the long hair at the Tampa Bay Rays. I'd look into him for the bullpen. If they get rid of the three-batter rule, you know, you have to face three batters, I'd go after a guy like Alex Claudio, who's really good against left-handed batters, terrible against righties. So with the three-batter rule, that kind of player is not that valuable.
Is that something they're considering getting rid of?
I've heard some talk about it. You know what I hate too, Don? Joe Girardi came out and said it's a terrible rule and it takes strategy out of the game. And I go, no. I think it's just as strategic as the other thing. How you make your lineup up. When you're going to bring in that guy to face the three batters, there's strategy involved. It's just not the strategy that you like.
Right.
It's harder strategy than I'm bringing in a lefty to face a lefty, and then I'm going to go to the bullpen and face a righty with a righty. This is strategic. How am I getting this guy through three players? And when I'm making out my lineup, how am I going to set a trap for a manager so when he brings in a guy, he's going to have a minefield in the middle of it? So I think that what they're disappointed about, Don, is they thought it was going to speed up the game, and the length of game went up. But I looked something up last night. You're going to be shocked by this.
Okay.
The average length of a major league game is 3 hours and 6 minutes, give or take a minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
The average length of a pro football game is 3 hours and 12 minutes. Nobody complains about the length of the game. And in an average pro football game, there's 11 minutes of action.
Right.
In a baseball game, there's 18 minutes of action.
There's a couple of things at play here. Number one, there's not as many games. So I think you're kind of just, people that are watching football, probably consuming it all day on Sunday, so they're not really worried about the length of a game. Where baseball, it's every single day. So you're asking people to watch a football game like the equivalent of every day in baseball, right? Mm-hmm. So the length matters, Michael, right? Because
excuse me?
I'm going to watch it. I got to watch it tomorrow, too. All right? That's number one. Number two, we've always talked about the action. Like football, football's meant to have those stops and starts, right? There's always fits and starts, but there's always that drama leading up to that big play and a lot to analyze between the plays, so it doesn't matter as much. You've always said, Michael, you'll sit there and watch a game for 5 hours if there's a lot of action.
Right.
We're not seeing a lot of action. So for 3 hours, what are we seeing? I would dare say we see, even though there's more minutes of action in a baseball game, seven more minutes of action by your calculation, 18 to 11, those 11 minutes are a lot more fun in football than they are in the 18 minutes in baseball. Because the quote-unquote action could be a ground ball to second.
I just think that there's got to be something different with the nomenclature that we use. It's not the length of the game. It's the pace of the game.
Right.
So when baseball's thinking of rules to speed up the game, the way the game is played right now, you cannot speed the game up. It's strikeouts, walks, and home runs. You cannot speed the game up. And there's guys throwing 100 miles an hour, so there's foul ball after foul ball after foul ball. You can't speed it up unless you diametrically change the rules of the game. So something like that is a dumb way to speed up the game.
And you're losing so many reasons why I fell in love with the sport. Like, I'm reading the Tom Seaver book, and we're going to have Bill Madden on 6:30.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Like, the romance of the pitching position is gone. Like, I just was remembering the history of Tom Seaver and all the complete games and the 300th win and the number of strikeouts. Like, the baseball is supposed to be about accumulation of numbers. What do you accumulate as a pitcher? None of the pitching records will ever be broken. Yeah, you still get an occasional no-hitter, but nobody's going to win 300 games anymore. Nobody's going to go out there and pitch 300 innings. All right, so that's over. So this iconic position of guy, they're out. We're looking for reasons to take the pitcher out now. Yeah, and so that's like a whole thing that I fell in love with the sport because I loved defense and I loved pitching because I was a pitcher when I was growing up and I was always fascinated with Nolan Ryan and Doc Gooden. That's pretty much all gone now. Some more iconic pitchers. How can they be iconic? What are they going after to be iconic?
It is interesting, though. We have two of the best pitchers in New York. Well, those guys, you pay to
see. I think we have one and two. Yeah, I don't even know what the order is.
Yeah, we might.
And both of them, as great as they are, it's still rare that they're pitching the eighth and ninth innings of games.
You're right.
You know, so they're not getting complete games. There's a lot of important things happening when they've already been taken out of the game. I mean, Tom Seaver pitched a complete game for his 300th victory at 42 years old.
Yep. And he said he routinely threw 145 pitches.
Yeah,
he threw 155.
He threw 142 pitches in his 300th win at 42, Peter. Or 41, whatever his age was. You're talking about over the age of 40 years old. But the point is that you bring in all these things to kind of speed up the game. But a lot of the iconic things, like great defensive plays can't happen, Michael, if the ball's not in play.
Yep. Just the way the game is played now. A couple of other names that I thought were really interesting. You couldn't even imagine 3 years ago that Kyle Schwarber would ever be non-tendered by the Cubs.
Right.
He was due to make $9 million with arbitration this year. He's gone. Now, maybe they sign him to a multi-year deal at a lot less money. And I mentioned on Twitter last night that the Yankees have always liked him. Even last year, they were discussing trading for him. And one thing that the Yankees need to do, I think, this coming offseason is get some left-handed bats. Kyle Schwarber's swing at Yankee Stadium would be very dangerous. But I got to be honest, he doesn't fit. As long as Stanton's going to be the DH, Schwarber is a below-average left fielder. I guess he could play some first base. But his position is best suited to be DH. And although the Yankees love his skill set, he's not a great defender. He does strike out. He can hit. He can hit. He helped them win that World Series in 2017. That's a guy that's intriguing. Eddie Rosario of the Twins, another lefty bat who can hit home runs. They didn't tender him either. Here's a guy that a lot of people might not look at as a big name. I think he's a guy who really could help a team. And that's Travis Shaw. Lefty bat. He did not have a good 2019, struggled last year. You know, he had back-to-back 30 home run games. He can play a couple of positions. He could play first, he could play third, and be an off-the-bat power bench. That's a guy the Yankees could look into. So, I mean, there's certain. Jace Peterson had a .393 on-base percentage with the Braves last year, not tendered. He can play the corner outfield spots, the corner infield spots. So he's one of those super utility guys. Another guy to look at, a former Yankee, Ben Gamel, was not tendered by Milwaukee. He's available. So, the free agent market is now flooded. But I will tell you this, everybody I'm talking to in baseball, there's not a lot of money to be spent. There's just not. They're not spending money. The only team that's going to spend a lot of money, I think, will be the Mets. And that gives them a great advantage. And did you see the story today, Don? They're not looking at Real Muto. They want McCann.
Mm. All right. Well,
does that surprise you?
Yeah, well, it does. But if that's what Sandy sees as the better player, the more valuable player.
I wonder where Real Muto ends up. The Phillies say they can't afford him.
Yeah. Although their claims of losing, what did they claim? I know they lost like hundreds of millions, but they were claiming like $1 billion or something.
Yeah, that I think that was a misprint because they changed it in later editions. It was Bill Madden's story. I found out the other day. That last year, I can't say lost money because I can't get inside the books. But last year, the Yankees did not make $250 million that they thought they were going to make. Now, you can say they lost it. I doubt that they lost money, but I don't know the books. No. But $250, and this coming offseason, they're probably going to lose another $150. Now, you can say that's a team worth $5 billion. But if somebody told you, by the way, over the next 2 years, you're going to lose $400 million that you expected to make, you're going to tighten the belt a little bit, no matter how rich you are.
Right. I mean, that comes up a lot, like what's in the red and what's in the black.
Right.
And so you figure, like, well, if you're not in the red, then what's the big deal? But a lot of these teams, like the Yankees, probably spend for the future, assuming a certain amount of money is going to be made. So if you come up short $250 million, that means if that keeps happening, then you, and because you spend for things down the road in certain contracts that you anticipate to make a certain amount of money, you could end up in the red.
And so, no one knows what, I mean, Hal Steinbrenner came on this air and said they lost the most money of any team in baseball. Yankees, you know, they average 40,000 people a game. So all of a sudden you're taking 3.2 million people approximately each year, and let's say each of them spends approximately $100. You do the math. That's a lot of money.
You know, I know it's hard to defend the owners because they're all billionaires and all that, but you cannot argue the amount of money that these franchises and all these sports have lost because of the pandemic. And not
they're scrambling, Don. You know the NHL is really in trouble.
Well, they're in trouble. 50% of their revenue comes from the gate. And right now they had a memorandum of understanding about how much the players were going to give back. And now the owners look like jerks because now they're asking for the players to give more back because they're partners because of the salary. But when they made that agreement, you know, they probably felt, and they were wrong, that at some time during the season, they were going to have fans. And now we look at the pandemic as raging here in December. We don't know when it's going to be over, you know, as far as like this season is concerned. Mm-hmm. The NHL went from possibly trying to squeeze 60 games in now to 48. There's a very good possibility they won't have any fans for the rest of the season, especially if we're talking about the vaccine not being widely available until possibly June or July of next year. So now you lost money last year. You're going to lose money this year. Plus, Michael, do we know when everybody is going to come back after the pandemic is over? Like, when will a franchise be able to say, when can the Yankees say, we are now going to be able to make what we anticipated we were going to make in 2020? But when are we going to get back to 2019?
2022.
Maybe.
Well, I think the world will be back to, I mean, Fauci said that you're going to have packed stadiums by fall.
Okay. Now,
By next fall.
Right. By next fall, which is 8 months from now. Okay. 8-9 months from now. And, okay, pandemic's over. Masks are off. We're back to going out there. How many people can afford to go to games? The restaurants that have gone under, the people that have been out of work for so long. When is the economy going to be back to where it was? And you hear, like, tourism in New York City, I brought this up a couple of weeks ago, may not be back to normal till 2025. All right, because they're not sure that people are going to be traveling as often and as much as they were before because they're not going to have that disposable income. So can you count on the Yankees drawing 3 million fans when the pandemic is over? Not because they're scared to come to the stadium. Can they afford to go?
I think the whole world, I mean, I just saw today that HBO is going to play every single Warner Brothers feature movie on streaming for next year. So they don't expect the theaters to come back.
Right.
So it's hard to plan out. So, you know, fans are going to go nuts. These guys have so much money, why don't they spend? The only owner who didn't lose money last year was Stephen Cohen. That's it. He's the one who's free and clear to spend what he wants.
And that's what probably scared a lot of the owners off in approving him because they knew just that. Because it ended up making them look bad that the Mets are spending a lot of money and they're not. But I can understand because I wonder, Michael, how many companies are going to be able to spend the money for the suites that they spent before, if they're laying off people and now are making a fraction of what they were making when they agreed to a $250,000 suite for a year or a $500,000 suite for a year at Yankee Stadium or Madison Square Garden. Heck, Michael, they build these stadiums with less fans because they want to accommodate more suites. And the companies that own these suites, some of them might be out of business.
It's uncertain times, and yeah. I will not sit here at any point during this off season and criticize an owner whichever way you want to parse the numbers, there's no way they made the money they thought they were going to make in 2020. I don't know how they made money. And there's a grand uncertainty whether there's going to be 162 games next year in baseball. We don't even know when spring training is going to start. And are you going to start spring training in the middle of a pandemic in February? In Arizona and Florida, I doubt it. So that's going to be, again, I don't know. Nobody's told me. And maybe for the entertainment business, the vaccines will be available. I have no idea.
And here's the
scary
thing.
But everything is uncertain. And businessmen don't like uncertainty. They like certainty.
And, you know, what's scary, too, and tell me if I'm wrong, guys, that the feeling at the beginning of the pandemic was, all right, well, they might not have as many fans in the stands or no fans, but look, the ratings are going to be so through the roof, they'll be able to make up so much money. Guess what? Mm-hmm. They weren't. Right? The numbers were better in some places, but worse in others. So the television ratings bonanza wasn't there to where they can make up some of the money that way. Heck, are the networks going to be able to offer? Maybe football's different because it's just the numbers are unbelievable, but when all of the television contracts are up for the other sports, Michael, will they be as lucrative as they would have been before the pandemic hit?
Well, I believe football will be much more lucrative because it's the one dependable programming, and they haven't lost. Baseball signed up for their deal with Fox. They extended it. The NBA deal with ESPN still is lengthy. I don't know what the NHL deal is.
The NHL is up at the end of the year, and they're hoping
that's
possibly
problematic.
Get back to with ESPN. ESPN's like hot to get it, but I think it's a commodity that people want. But how much are they going to pay for it? You know, when in the financial situation that they're in, and so nobody is asking you to cry for the owners. I mean, they're all billionaires, but you can understand when they're kind of apprehensive about things because money is being lost big time.
Couple of football notes. The Seahawks, Josh Gordon has been conditionally reinstated final 2 weeks of this year. This is a guy who's had a lot of problems, violations of the league's policies on performance-enhancing substances of abuse. He's been suspended six times since 2013.
You know what they say, though? Seven times the charm.
Well, you know what?
Steve,
who are we to say this is how many chances you get?
No. I'm making a joke because it's ridiculous, but I'm all for him getting another chance. He's not harming anyone. He's harmed himself. I hope he figures it out.
And then with the Jets, and we opened up with this, Adam Gase kind of threw himself on the mercy of the court, took a complete U-turn from what he said yesterday, where he kind of put the onus on Sam Darnold for not performing, mm-hmm. and now he said it's all on him. He failed to develop Darnold.
Now, did somebody within the Jets organization get to him? Or did he have
to the show? He heard you.
Did he have a moment of clarity where he said, "You know what? I got to do some damage control here. How can I get a job? How am I going to be able to land on my feet being this unlikable? I don't know. Something changed.
It's not only the content. He sounds more likable in the audio too.
Unless you always try to read the tea leaves here. Did somebody call him in and say, listen, you're not getting fired, so just make yourself more presentable? Or did somebody say, you're fired, and don't try to be a tough guy, and then he just came out and told the truth because he knows he's going to get fired?
Or maybe, he has the same agent as Sam. Did Sexton get on the phone with him and say, dude, come on, that's my client. What are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, we'll take some phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. We have a big ENN coming out. We're still waiting to get a hold of R.J. Bell. And by the way, through no fault of his, this is not, he's always prompt and on time. So it's just an issue.
Well, just can he just send us his picks and we'll give it to him? We'll give the audience the picks.
Well, worst comes to worst, that's what we'll do.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's not going to happen. He's not interrupting my ENN.
Thank you, Don.
Imagine if he had to interrupt your list.
No, that's fine, because it's inconsistent. It's not every day.
6 o'clock.
I count on ENN.
Thank you, Don.
A lot of other people do as well.
All right, so let's towel off right now.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, this is a towel off moment.
It is.
And we'll get to the phones, 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LeGreco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes
sure
on 88.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, like the other day, Don and I were talking about how great it would be to have the Eddie Murphy jacket from Beverly Hills Cop. Baseball signature. Baseball's always the same.
I spent a lot of money on a Bob Mackey gown that Cher used to wear. I parade around the house all
the time. Is that true?
Do you really?
Yeah, it looks
is
great.
That right?
Yes, that is right. By the way, how'd the CC interview go today in Hot 97?
I didn't listen to it.
Rave reviews?
I'm sure people are very excited about it. I mean, I doubt we got as much mileage out of it as we did on this show yesterday. By the way, Don, do me a favor.
Yes.
I just for you, I pulled a bunch of other items that were for auction from movies that I thought you'd be interested in.
Okay.
But then I forgot to do it during ENN. So during ENN, I'm asking you to jump in and say, hey, don't forget to tell me about the auctions.
Excellent.
And by the way, I was short on the Buckner ball. It cost him $410,000.
Yeah, it's a total ripoff for a baseball. Caught a foul ball from Marty Barrett for free. I used to play with him.
This is Met history, Peter. They've only won two championships. That was one of the reasons why they won one of them.
Fine.
Oh, and that's an iconic moment in baseball, period.
No, right? It is. I'm kidding. It is. I just don't think baseballs are very fun.
Well, sitting in the right field bleachers in 1976 when Chambliss hit the home run.
Right.
They got the ball. But they were Met fans.
Mm.
The next day, they're playing with it where we lived. And it got past one of the guys, and it rolled into a sewer. That's where Chris Chambliss' home run ball was.
Are you serious?
That's a different time.
Rolled into a sewer?
Into a sewer.
Now, when you guys used to have a ball roll into the sewer, what'd you do?
You'd look down there, dream about being Stretch Armstrong, and you knew you would never be able to get it, and you left it there.
You didn't know anyone with a... You couldn't find a crowbar?
Who's going to climb into a sewer?
We always did it.
They had no sewers in Chevy Chase.
What do you think the water... Where do you think the water goes?
Yeah, but it's not the same as a New York sewer.
No, you're right. A New York sewer is more disgusting. We had these, but we had sewers, and there were a couple on the block where we played football, and if the ball went in, we'd have to pry open the lid and jump it down into the sewer and get it.
Now, you probably have rats there with, like, top hats on. I know the whole thing about rats.
Rats with top hats. You know
what? That's the title of my 25th
book, by the way.
Rats with top hats?
By Michael K. Yes.
Oh, my God. And it would be about your ascent from the streets of the Bronx to the very...
I love it.
Yeah.
Rats with top hats. Next on Yes. Anyway, we come back, take more phone calls. Still waiting on RJ Bell. We have ENN coming up as well. Settle in, shower off, towel off. Right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, join us every Football Friday this season for our Cover 3 Trivia Contest, where we'll give a lucky caller the chance to prove their fandom and win up to $100 to PC Richard & Son and more. It's brought to you by PC Richard & Son. For appliances, TVs, electronics, and mattresses, shop in-store or online and get free delivery or curbside pickup at any location. PC Richard & Son, shop safe, shop local. Oh, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Alex in Bridgewater. Alex.
How you guys doing? Happy holidays.
Same to you.
I just had a question. I saw an article earlier today. It says the Yankees and DJ LeMahieu's camp are at a stalemate on the five-year situation. And I just wanted to see, what do you think? Like, are they dying on that hill legitimately? Are they not going to give them that fifth year? How dire do you think it is for them? And as a local to the area, Don, I wanted to mention how big it is that the Patriots are now the new double-A for the Yankees. It's just really cool as a kid who played Little League around here, you know?
No, it's definitely awesome. I think the ticket prices will be a lot more expensive, but it's a gorgeous ballpark, Michael. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
In Bridgewater, New Jersey. It's perfect. It's a great setting. It's a great area. They're going to do tremendous there. Hopefully, you know, by the time we get to when the season starts, the fans will be able to go. But that's going to add a lot of excitement to the area for sure.
Now, in terms of DJ, I believe that is their priority. They desperately want to sign him, but there's a limit to everything. So the caller asks, is that a hill they're going to die on the 5 years? Well, you could ask DJ, who wants to play for the Yankees, is that a hill he's going to die on? So is somebody going to blink? Is there going to be somebody who swoops in who gives that fifth year and the Yankees won't? I don't know. All I could tell you is that from what I've heard the last couple of days, he is priority. He's a priority. And they know that, you know, the payroll is probably going to shrink or stay the same. And they want this guy. This guy's an MVP caliber player. Hit 364. But, you know, I know how fans are. You know, yesterday on Twitter, Why haven't they done it yet? Because it's called negotiating. You just don't give everything. I mean, every business has a limit. Every business has a payroll limit. And they probably have a number in their mind that they think that they would go to. And they're going to go back and forth. And hopefully it could get done because they do want them back. But I can't swear they're going to get it done. Because, you know, I saw the same story about a stalemate. I don't think they want to go to 5 years. But and is there somebody out there that does? Adam in Bergen County. Adam.
Hey, Mike. What's going on?
How you doing?
Good. I happen to hear you talk about that Chambliss ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be calling about that before you brought that up.
Really?
There's a YouTube channel of an ex-jewel thief named Larry Lawton.
He was a good friend of mine growing up.
This
seriously?
Yeah, I swear to God. He went to prison. He was in the Coast Guard. His nickname was Peaches.
I'm sorry?
There's validity to this story.
He talked about it?
I happened to bring it up.
So, Adam, he spoke about it on YouTube?
Yeah, and I gave the screener the actual video, and it has over 500,000 views. He has over 1 million subscribers.
Yeah, he was one of the guys that was throwing the ball around. I wouldn't because I thought it was a sacred object.
Okay, well, that's what I wanted to say. He made it sound like you were kind of involved in playing in the game.
Hold on, there's a lot. What's your name, sir?
Adam.
Adam, there's a lot to digest here. Can you stay on the show till 7 o'clock? Because, Don, there's a lot here. Number one, had Michael mentioned to us that he was hanging out with hardened criminals?
No.
No, he wasn't a hardened criminal then.
Really?
But how do you not say, oh, by the way, this guy turned out to be a jewel thief?
Right, and meanwhile, Don's friends who have done nothing, you call them all jailbirds.
But wait a second. Larry, at this time in 1970, he was 14 years old.
But it's still someone.
He
that
was an absolute angel. I didn't know he was going to go on to become a jewel thief.
But you still buried
your friends
the lead.
Were smoking pot in the back of your car.
And you and what happened?
Criminals.
Oh my God, but
Michael. I think Peter's point, though, ultimately is a great caveat to that story. Is oh, by the way. One of the guys turned out to be a jewel thief.
But it was like six or seven people playing. Larry wasn't the only one with the ball.
Yeah, but still. What's Larry's name?
Larry Lawton. L-A-W-T-O-N.
Oh, pops right up. It says American author.
Yeah, he's written a book, too. He goes in and goes to prison and talks to prisoners about what not to do.
Oh,
to not
get you were friends with this guy?
Into. Yeah.
He's terrifying.
Oh, he's all jacked up and tatted up. But that wasn't the guy I knew.
So the perfect angel you knew turned into a monstrous, tattooed jewelry thief.
Meanwhile, my friends are criminals because they smoked pot.
This is what I'm saying.
They smoked pot in your car. That's committed a crime in front of you. Larry never stole jewels in front of me.
Really?
I'm a Jace.
Who'd he steal the Chambliss ball from?
He caught it at the stadium.
Did he?
Yeah, he jumped down out of the right field bleachers and picked it up.
Now, you do see people jumping down. Like, it's really scary.
One of them is Peaches.
And it's a very good possibility, Peter, since it was behind the wall, that somebody else got it, and Peaches just laid into him and took the ball away.
Peaches was so small. If Peter sees the picture now, if you saw Peaches then, he was small and scrawny.
Now, by the way,
He got bulked up like that in prison.
I want to be clear. It sounds like from his Wikipedia page, it sounds like he's really gotten it together and has done really positive things. I believe in rehabilitation. I'm like Michael Kay. But I just can't believe you'd leave out the early life here. I mean, this man was doing a lot of things.
It wasn't the story I was telling.
I was telling you, by the way,
Chris Chambliss ball is down a sewer in the Bronx in Frog's Neck.
He went to jail for racketeering.
My God.
And showed no indication.
He was placed
none.
In the streets.
Absolutely none, Don.
He was placed in solitary for 11
now,
months.
I had friends back then.
Wow.
That showed signs. I mean, they were booking bets and stuff like that. Not Peaches.
Did you stay friends with the bookies?
Well, they were a little older group than me. I made sure I wasn't around them.
Organized crime, bookmaker and collector. His acumen and aggressiveness eventually caught the attention of higher-ups. This led to his occupation as a jewelry thief. Robin stores all along the East Coast of the United States. He also used part of his earnings to purchase an Italian pizza restaurant in Florida, which he later burned down in an insurance fraud scam.
Wow. Son, like Goodfellas. The company, he's straight out of Goodfellas.
Let's go to Paul in Rochester. Paul.
Wow.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. I just calling about DJ LeMahieu. I think the Yanks have to sign him. The kid's a pure hitter with multiple batting titles. If you take a look at the players with multiple batting titles, you'll find hitters who had long careers like Tony Gwynn, Ichiro Suzuki, Pete Rose, Wade Boggs. These guys played well into their 40s. So if you give him 5 years, he's 37. I think he's good to 39. I mean, he continues to get better each year. He hits even his outs, when he hits it out, they're still hit hard. And he just looks like a pure hitter to me. And Peter, you owe an apology to me and the fans for calling Tony Dungy a lunatic last week. It got me offended. He's a gentleman. He's a stand-up guy. And I think you owe everyone an apology.
Well,
John, you also owe an apology.
Oh. For what?
The rant on golf. Golf is a fantastic sport. Gentleman's game. Someday, I think you will enjoy it.
John is about 64 years old now. He's not going to enjoy it anytime soon.
I'm not going to apologize to his sport. But, Peter, the floor is yours, because Dungy, last I checked, is a stand-up human being.
I'm not a
very
fan.
Very religious man, too.
That doesn't mean nothing.
Man of God.
A lot of people have died because of religion.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I mean, it's the source of all wars. Yeah, it's a major, you know, this is just because you're religious, you can be an incredible human being because you're religious. Look what it did for Dr. King, for example. But some people... it's not always a positive thing. In the case of Tony Dungy, I'm sure it is. That said, lunatic was the wrong word to use.
You think?
Okay, so.
I would like apologies to apologize for using the word lunatic. I should have used something like, he's a drip. I find him boring, not particularly special or talented. And, you know, he won a Super Bowl.
How'd you make the leap to lunatic, though?
It just came out. You know, I do 8 hours of live radio a day. Right. It's a miracle. It's not worse.
It's what happens when you make a living with extemporaneous talk. Sometimes
thank you, Don.
Words fly through that you don't.
How come we never say words like that?
Oh, really?
Come on.
Words
Michael.
Are tools.
I've said things I regret 3 seconds after I say them, like almost daily.
So, and lunatic's not that bad.
Well, when you say Tony Dungy, you offend a man in Rochester.
I have a question. I want to bring up the Billy Joel conversation we had earlier.
Okay.
You guys tried to argue with me, Michael in particular, about how bad the word lunatic was. And you may
just
be right.
Just may be a lunatic. That person just might be a lunatic.
He said, I just may be the lunatic you're looking for.
Right.
So how bad is
it? Lunatics.
How bad is it really?
But Tony Dungy is so far from a lunatic.
Turn out the lights. You don't know that. Don't try to save me.
You may be wrong, but
for all I know, but you may be right. But yeah, I'm still not a fan.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.